what we saw early on where people try to use things like Stripe to enable payments, they would either charge too little or they would maybe charge too much. In order to keep their agent running, the builder would have to go in and pay more, right? So they weren't covering their costs. Or alternatively, they had some vague sense of costs and they put in this price that would effectively gouge at least the lower end of their consumption base, and they saw a lot of churn. And these builders, instead of trying to fix the issue, they just turn them off. So it was like businesses going out of business. They'd start up and then they'd fold overnight. And we just thought this was stupid. I'm Don Gossin. I'm the co-founder and CEO at Nevermind.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Like 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what to do next.
Took many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
Our company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a
pain. Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labhart. And today, how Don Gossin is building the decentralized AI payments protocol, delivering the standard for AI to AI transactions. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Grow your API user adoption and improve engineering velocity with friction-free integration experiences. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in minutes. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, and AutoTrader, you're in good hands. Join the Wolfpack at qawolf.com. Don Gossin is Canadian, but at this point in name only. He lives in Portugal with his wife and 2 daughters. He grew up all over the world, and his career has afforded him to travel the globe. He's been in the machine learning space for 20 years, but spent his early days in statistical modeling, which was fun to set up, but boring to operate. For fun, he enjoys traveling and skiing, in particular off-trail, and anywhere in Japan during the winter. In 2016, Don caught the crypto bug, but not from the speculative component. He was fascinated with the providential integrity that is found in the blockchain. This culminated with 20 years of experience in deep tech and led him down the path of AI agent payments. This is the creation story of Nevermind.
So what we believe is that we're witnessing the rise of a new consumer that's going to manifest as trillions of AI agents. The infrastructure that exists for payments presently, it's inadequate to meet the demands of the type of scale that we think is going to happen on the agentic AI side. Existing payment solutions like Stripe, for example, they're designed around pricing of SKUs. An AI agent, on the other hand, they're dynamic in nature. There's 2 emergent definitions, and they're very quickly converging on one another. One is, by definition, effectively a model that has the ability to reason. The other definition is a service or a model that has the ability to select tools. We subscribe to the latter definition of agents being these brains that can select tools from a set of AI tools at their disposal. And that's derived from our experience in building these types of systems at scale. You know, what people will be familiar with now are models. So an AI agent is going to have access to at least 1 model, if not multiple models, possibly from different vendors. the selection of those tools is going to be orchestrated amongst contextual data sets that are relevant to the particular use case or the question that's been posed to that agent. Really, the form factor of these agents or these analytical pipelines now comes in the form of these agents. You and I, we can engage with agents. We can engage with the same agent, right? But we might have completely different profiles. I'm a simple user, you're a power user. Yet we're going to use the same agent, right? Let's just say you and I are going to use some third-party agent, and that agent, for simplicity's sake, uses the GPT series of models from OpenAI. So it has access to GPT-3 and 3.5 and 4. I submit my simple request to this agent, and that agent's backend decomposes that request and routes the request to a model that's going to sufficiently handle the complexity of that request, so it gets routed to GPT-3. And you, on the other hand, you submit a multimodal request to the agent. That gets decomposed and routed to a model that can handle the multimodality. That's going to be at least GPT-4. The issue here is that the spread, the cost difference between instantiating GPT-3 in response versus instantiating GPT-4 is like an order of magnitude, if not more, in cost difference. Accounting for that cost difference is non-trivial. So what we've created is basically a system of unit accounting that's going to enable for accounting on those differences in costs. That straps onto an AI agent's observability function and takes the metered cost of running that agent service and translates it into a settlement cost for the user. We're building the PayPal of AI. We believe that we're in a category-defining stage. That category is AI commerce. So we're really going to be the economic engine that powers AI commerce forward. This is a culmination of 20 years worth of work in the machine learning and now AI space. In 2016, I caught the crypto bug, less from the perceived speculative component and more for the provenance attributes that come with blockchains. When you're building out analytical systems, you undermine the sort of efficacy of your inference if you can't accurately answer four questions. Where's the data or algorithm coming from? Where's it going? Who's using it or what's using it? And what are they doing with it? If you're unable to answer just one of those four questions, it undermines the validity of any inference or actionable insight that you receive from the system. Where we started was trying to establish that breadcrumb trail of all of these different components that come together to form these analytic pipelines and these solutions. That's where we started. And in and amongst this, because obviously we're using crypto rails as the backend, they come with this innate sort of payments or settlement feature. And so we were exploring how all of these different characteristics and capabilities merge together. And what we realized a couple of years ago is that actually the payments piece at this juncture is one of the more critical components to all of this for the exact reasons I was stating before with respect to getting accurate pricing, etc. In the summer of 2022, it started with Stability AI releasing Stable Diffusion. So this is on the Gen AI art side. Was obviously catalyzed with OpenAI releasing ChatGPT in the fall of that year, was this transition from AI specifically being like a fringe domain into something that was like very productive and captured a lot of attention. And what that attention brought was a bunch of quite capable engineering and computer science capabilities. And people started prompt engineering these models to do specific things. And now, obviously, we've evolved into this agentic space. But yeah, what we saw back then were people would build a model that was capable of taking an input and then providing some sort of defined output. And in real time, we would witness, because we were working with these builders, they would push these things to market. And some of these guys would get like hundreds of thousands of users virtually overnight. They would encounter this residual issue on the cost side. of operating these things because they hadn't thought about how to commercialize. They just thought, I want to build this thing, it's cool, and then they push it to effectively to market, and a bunch of people would become interested in them, dogpile on them, start using them. But that didn't happen in a vacuum, right? There were costs being incurred to run these AIs, and those costs are being assumed by the builder. What we saw early on were people try to use things like Stripe to enable payments, and they would hit these walls, right? They would either charge too little or they would maybe charge too much, right? So if they charge too little, what would happen is they wouldn't account for these proverbial power users that would enter the fray and just tear through the allotted number of tokens that the third-party model provider was allowing for that subscription tier or whatever. And so in order to keep their agent or their AI running, the builder would have to go in and pay more, right? So they weren't covering their costs. They were underwriting the cost of this usage. Or alternatively, they had some vague sense of costs and they put in this price that would effectively gouge at least the lower end of their consumption base, and they saw a lot of churn. So very quickly, these things became unproductive, and these builders, instead of trying to fix the issue, they just turn them off. So it was like businesses going out of business. They'd start up and then they'd fold overnight. And we just thought this was stupid. There needed to be and there had to be an answer. Lo and behold, in part of our go-to-market at the time, we discovered this real gravitational pull towards what we had built on the payments front. And we kept hearing when we would demo what we'd built, oh, I can use this for payments. That was the fall of 2022, where we really said, look, the payment space is where we think we need to be for all of this, and just dove in head first.
Let's dive into what you would consider the MVP then. Wherever point you want to take it where this was the MVP, how long did it take you to build? And that's going to be interesting because this is a culmination of a bunch of different things, and I'm curious about that. And what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
If you take the full end-to-end life cycle, this is a five-year journey. There's a lot of technical debt within that five-year period. If we were to discreetly analyze how long has it taken us to go to market with this particular proposition, we're probably looking at dedicated timeline, 18 months within that five-year cycle. From a tooling point of view, in particular, the year prior to 2024, we did a bunch of augmentation to help with the positioning of the solution. So I mentioned we're using blockchain on the back end. We use that for this system of unit accounting, right? The model that we use there, it's something called license tokenization, a relatively traditional licensing scheme. But it's an ability to discreetly price the services or tools within a platform, or in this case, an AI agent. So in the case that I described before, this third-party agent that Noah, you and I are using, and it has the ability to access GPT-3, 3.5, and 4. In a license tokenization world, you and I would gain initial access to that agent by acquiring that agent's set of tokens, or what we call credits. And then each of those tools, so say ChatGPT has a redemption criteria of 3 tokens, GPT 3.5, 100 tokens, GPT 4, 400 tokens. As a simple user, I make my simple request and that gets routed to GPT-3. Out of my pool of 1,000 tokens, I'm charged 10. Versus you as the power user and with your multimodal request that goes to GPT-4, you're charged 400 tokens out of your pool of 1,000. And so that's how we enable the system of unit accounting that we're doing on-chain, where that redemption piece is enabled through smart contracts. And so the mint of those 1,000 credits or tokens and the burn based on the service that's selected by the agent. So yeah, that's the underpinnings to what we built. And then we spent a lot of time, as I mentioned, trying to cater to audiences. There's a not insignificant demographic within the AI proper world, the non-crypto AI development space, that just has a clear dislike for anything crypto. So we've obfuscated all of that away. you can register and log in or register your agent, etc., through socials like Gmail or your GitHub account or what have you. So very expected flow from that point of view. On the back end, that registration function still results in a wallet that's created, but it's a non-custodial wallet. We don't have access to it. It's an MPC solution. And then we've gone so far as to integrate fiat into the overall workflow on a checkout side. Again, going back to this very simple example use case that I provided, me being a simple user, I don't have any crypto affinity. I don't have a wallet. I don't really know what any of this stuff means. So I can use the system with my socials. I can register with my Gmail. Unbeknownst to me, I got a wallet in the back end. But if I want to use this agent and it costs $1, well, I can pay $1 with my credit card or my debit card through a Stripe integration. Versus, you know, a power user, you're a crypto degen in this case, and you've got a wallet, you got a bunch of USDC, you can pay one USDC for your 1,000 credits.
This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory.
I'm so pumped about my new offshore dev partner. I'm saving a ton, and they even signed an NDA. Wait, is that our financial statements on the internet?
My dev partner has great communication. They can acknowledge an issue or email message super fast after they run it through Google Translate, of course.
I have a call set up with my partner right now. Hey, guys. Guys, are you there? Wait, did you just ghost me?
Ever been in these situations? Yeah, me too. That is, until I found Tekla. Tekla is world-class, nearshore talent for technology teams who demand the highest standards. The platform gives you access to over 50,000 vetted Latin America technology experts, including developers, designers, and IT professionals, all fluent in English and all in your time zone. In 7 days or less, you can have your tech expert hired through Tekla's fast, efficient hiring process, which helps you find and onboard top candidates. Get senior-level talent at competitive rates, often half the cost of hiring in the U.S., but aligned with U.S. work culture and time zones, making teamwork easy and productive. Hire the best tech experts today with Tekla. Learn more at tekla.io. That's T-E-C-L-A.io. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Whether you're growing the user adoption of your public API or streamlining internal development, SDKs can turn the chore of API integration into effortless implementation. Unburden your API users from guessing their way around your API while keeping your team focused on your product. Shorten the time to live integration and provide a delightful experience for your customers. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate up-to-date, robust, idiomatic SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in just a matter of minutes. SDKs are feature-rich with type safety, auto-retries, and pagination. Everything you need to give your API the developer experience it deserves. Deliver a premium API experience without the premium price tag. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory to get started and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by Vanta. Trust isn't just earned, it's demanded. Whether you're a startup founder navigating your first audit or a seasoned security professional scaling your GRC program, proving your commitment to security has never been more critical or more complex. That's where Vanta comes in. Businesses use Vanta to establish trust by automating compliance for in-demand frameworks like SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more. And with automation and AI throughout the platform, you can proactively manage vendor risk and complete security questionnaires up to 5 times faster, getting valuable time back. Vanta can also save you money. A new IDC white paper found that Vanta customers achieve $535,000 per year in benefits. so the platform pays for itself in just 3 months. Join over 10,000 global companies like Atlassian, Quora, and Factory who use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. For a limited time, listeners get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/codestory. That's VANTA.com/codestory for $1,000 off. So that's actually a really good segue into my next question. So you've made the architectural decisions, you've built the foundation of the product. Now you're moving forward. Tell me about how you're going about that. How are you going about maturing and progressing, you know, what you've built and never mind? And to wrap in a box a little bit, what I'm looking for is, how do you go about building a roadmap? What criteria do you follow or process do you follow to decide that, okay, this is the next most important thing to build or to address?
We're quite focused on AI to AI interactions. In this world of trillions of AI agents, we believe that there's going to be a significant amount of activity that takes place that's removed from the human agent, the carbon-based agent in that transactional ecosystem. So we're B to C, ultimately aiming for B to AI, where we're working with agent frameworks and multi-agent system builders to enable the agents that get built using those tools to have the ability to pay and get paid. Working with the likes of OLAS, Naptha, Flock, SuperAgent, organizations on our target list are like Crew AI, Agency. So these are companies that are focused on either enabling builders to build singular agents that need to get paid and make payments, or multi-agent systems where you're building out multiple agents that work together to solve particular problems. And the agents within those systems need to pay and get paid or reward one another. For most people listening to this, they're probably going to have questions around what the hell's an agent. It's a relatively new offering. OpenAI just released Operator, Anthropic beat them to the punch a month and a half prior. You see this with DeepSeek R1, etc. What we believe is that we're just going to see more and more of these types of offerings emerge, likely tackling vertical problems, but that those problem statements will, the solutions to those problem statements will be sourced from multitudes of agents working together, either in collaboration or in competition. And so what we are hyper-focused on is enabling that system that's going to allow the commercial activity amongst those agents to scale.
What you're doing is cutting edge and very unique. And I'm curious about how you build your team. Like, how do you go about doing that? And what do you look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
Obviously, you're looking for a level of aptitude. But I am a pretty big promoter that, absent of most things, you can help somebody learn whatever it is they want to learn as long as there's an interest. A big requirement is demonstrating some affinity towards what we're doing. Because like you said, this is fringy. This is definitely an at-risk proposition. So what we're really looking for is like-minded spirits. Those that are recognize that this is a risk, that the guarantee for success is low, but on the flip side, the upside's massive. That's not everybody. Most people are more comfortable operating within a spectrum of comfort zone. And so it's not a proposition that's really for everyone. For lack of a better way to put this, we're looking for a team that's, everybody can go into founder mode. It's people that are not gonna sit around and wait to be told what to do, because this is so fringy, like you say. They have to recognize the problems, but not just recognize the problem and flag it. They got to be also willing to solve it, absent of anybody else. I guess the nice part about that is we don't need a ton of people in order to do this, or at least that's our strong opinion on the matter. We got to where we are today, by and large, with a handful of people, and we don't see us needing to get much bigger than a couple handfuls, a dozen people at most. The nice part about AI is working in AI is you can also eat your own dog food and use AI to make yourself more productive. Also, having people with that sort of mindset.
This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. If slow QA processes bottleneck your software engineering team and you're releasing slower because of it, you need a solution. You need QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, AutoTrader, and many more, you're in good hands. Ready to ship faster with fewer bugs? Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com to see if they can help you squash the QA bottleneck. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. Now, this will be super interesting, and this is sort of built into the DNA of what you've built and what you're accomplishing. So I'm curious about scalability, right? And I think of AI and agents, and I think of blockchain, and I think of all those things as highly scalable. But I'm curious if there has been any interesting areas where you've had to fight scalability as you've grown.
We're in that mid trajectory 0 to 1 phase. We haven't hit the growing pains yet. They're fully anticipated. We're in this risk on scenario where we're defining the market. And so at least at present, we have the ability to control that inflow. We haven't hit a stage yet where broad recognition that AI agents need payments is there yet, right? We're starting to see that. The reality is, up until 6-7 months ago, AI agents weren't even on people's radar. Now it has hit the vernacular, right? Or they've come into the fray in places like San Francisco, etc. And that's starting to broadcast itself outwardly. It's more about being ready for what's coming and then amplifying that we exist and working with those counterparties that are early and adopting this stuff. And where you find that more, I think naturally, is like at the intersection of Web3 and AI. Largely because anybody that's in Web3 already has probably some sort of degeneracy as it relates to economics and financial systems. And so there's a natural convergence there of all of this. And we've seen an uptick in the more traditional, quote unquote, AI space, where those that are on the peripheral of the Web3 AI cross-section are starting to recognize the benefits. But a lot of this too is still, let's just pay $5 and have this thing order me a pizza or whatever, or $15 and have this thing order me a pizza.
Okay, so as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you have built, specifically with Nevermind, what are you most proud of?
Honestly, probably the perseverance. This is something we've been working on for 5 years in earnest, and more broadly, going on 10 years at this cross-section of AI and Web3. When we started, up until 18, 24 months ago, people would look at us like we were nuts. And just having the conviction to stick with it. I think the adage of success is putting yourself in the right situation to take advantage of a lucky situation. It holds true, right? we have been able to persist to the point where now, luckily enough, everybody else has recognized the power of these tools and are dogpiling in. I was just in Paris for the AI Action Summit, and it's a completely different ballgame now. A year ago or 2 years ago, like, it was a completely different demographic at that event. You can just see the faucet has been turned on from a money point of view. You couldn't get into events. They were cordoned off by police presence. And that just speaks to where the attention now lies in all of this. I wasn't joking before when my statement of AI was viewed as fringy, like effectively viewed as pseudoscience up until very recently. And now all of a sudden, it's the hottest topic. Recognizing that early on, the trajectory of all of this and where we think things are going, and then having the tenacity to stick around, to be here when it pops off, that's probably the thing I'm most proud about.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
There have been certain decisions we've made in the past with respect to focus, putting too much emphasis on the non-fungibility of an asset like NFTs and that sort of thing, diverted attention away from the core proposition. It hasn't really negatively affected us from a productive capacity. It has affected maybe the branding and definitely the go-to-market. But yeah, so really the realization there is, yes, you need to ebb and flow with the market, but sticking to your guns and your conviction when you're early stage, something that you should try and do and not be distracted by other opportunities. Having the ability to recognize where you've been wrong and refocus is something that can be a requirement for this job. Some people are very good at just identifying opportunities and then pivoting into them. And then others are good at sticking to their guns and succeeding just through sheer perseverance.
This will be really interesting. Given where the industry's going, given where, you know, Nevermind is pointed, what does the future look like for, you know, for the product and for your team?
We're just going to see the integration of more and more agents. We're going to see the decomposition of, I think, larger agents into smaller subsets, things that are AI swarms, and that there should be a focus on this from an economic and commercial point of view, that there's a lot of talk around the GDP growth that will incur from this. And that's, in our opinion, not going to be solely due to the productive output of these agents, but in terms of like the economic role that they play with respect to increasing the velocity and volume of transactions. The economics of this is going to drive the further exploration and integration of these tools. I think it's a disruptive technology, right? There's going to be some pain ahead of us, but I'm also hyper optimistic with respect to the opportunities that lie ahead of us and also our ability to adapt to change. I'm super optimistic that what we're enabling is perhaps an alternative dimension of utility that's going to allow humanity to unlock further aspects of its creativity without being shackled with the mundane aspects of life. And so I think this is the next stepwise function for humanity in terms of unlocking our further capacity.
Don, let's switch to you. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
Close to home, growing up, seeing, at least in my perspective, like how to run a good business and contribute from a business side of things to society. I was influenced by my family directly. My grandfather bootstrapped himself from a prairie boy in Saskatchewan, middle of nowhere, Canada. He was a hockey player. He got drafted by the Red Wings and decided to forego that so he could do a degree in chemical engineering. And so this was back in the 40s. Was able to parlay that into a career at the end of his career in oil and gas. And at the end of his career, he was like the head engineer at Esso globally. Growing up in that environment, my dad, my uncle, they followed suit. So just having that, I don't know, that alignment to at least to some degree of what my perception of success looks like, those forebears definitely influence that. I don't know, some of it's just self-directed. I think any entrepreneur would kind of take that position. And then there's lots of different influence. For me personally, I'm constantly like reading and taking things in to isolate any one person. I don't think there's any one individual that I like hyper subscribe to their view, but it's a compilation of different views. And then I think also I've been afforded this very unique perspective because I moved around so much, both as a kid and as an adult. The influence has more been not individuals influencing me, but more cultures. And I feel like my ability to adapt to different settings, whether that's in the broader life picture or in the business sense, that background allows me to respond maybe better than other people. That aspect has definitely influenced my decision-making process and how I look at the world. Recognizing that not everybody sees things the same way, right? We don't all converge to the same cultural outlook, so there's different ways to problem solve. And you just have to, you got to look at the thing at this stage, right? The type of agent at the other side of the table and figure out how the negotiation's going to work.
Don, last question. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
You always have to try and be in market. Man, this is funny coming from me because I've been out of market for forever up until recently. But the goal should be you're trying to be in market. Maybe, like me, that market is actually years away, and then you've got to make sure that you're around to be in market, right? There's different strategies and tactics to enable that. This sort of proverbial product market fit concept is the thing you need to aim towards. Look, outlooks, roadmaps, North Stars can change. Depending on the industry you're in, you may or may not need to evolve quickly. I guess the other sort of advice I'd give is just be receptive to change, conflict, and difference of opinion.
That's fantastic advice. Well, Don, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Nevermind.
Thanks for having me.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.